is your reaction to the anti-Trump protesters who rallied last night in at least 10 major cities from coast to coast, from New York to Seattle, from Washington, D.C. to Los Angeles, in Chicago, and in St. Paul? The protesters, many members of the Latino and African American communities and their supporters, expressed their shock and their fear and their anger over the election of Donald Trump, a man they believed was elected despite of, maybe even because of, his sexist, racist, and xenophobic campaign rhetoric. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, November 10th. We are going to talk about the fear that many in minority communities are feeling today and welcome your thoughts and questions, and especially your own feelings. If you have concerns about what a Donald Trump victory means for you and your family and how people treat and view you. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest, first guest, is Andra Gillespie, an associate professor of political science at Emory University in Atlanta. She specializes in African American politics and political participation. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining us. Well, we actually booked you to talk about this before all these rallies broke out. What's your reaction to that? This is, you know, more than 10 major cities across the country from coast to coast, and some pretty big protests where people walked down to Trump-owned facilities and were carrying signs saying, "Not my president," and expressing their concerns. What's your reaction?
Well, I have a number of reactions. First, it's their First Amendment right to peaceably assemble and to express their dissent. So I think it's important to, you know, affirm their ability to be able to protest peacefully. However, there are a couple of things. There is going to be a new normal, and like it or not, Donald Trump is the newly elected president. So on some level, people are going to have to accept the fact that he's president and give him an opportunity to govern. I think the final question is, what is the proper use of protest as a leverage tool? So by protesting now, I mean, I think this is a time for people just to really express their shock, to grieve, and to kind of have a moment of public catharsis. But I think the question does kind of result from this as to whether or not this, what's the purpose of this? So I think if it's the purpose of getting together to express shock, that's fine. I hope that there aren't any expectations that this is going to necessarily cause a reaction in President-elect Trump. Perhaps President-elect Trump sees this, and that sparks a conversation about the consequences of words and rhetoric on the campaign trail, and that actually turns him in the direction of ensuring that he's really responsive in terms of his policy proposals. But, you know, at the same time, I think people need to have realistic expectations about what their protest is going to do for them. And I think it's also really important for people to do some soul searching. If you're protesting today, but you didn't vote on Tuesday, now you know what the consequences of not voting are.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about that, because there were some high hopes that voter turnout would be very high and in support of Hillary Clinton, for that matter, in the African-American communities and in the Latino communities. She got the majority of that vote, but it was certainly not as high as expected. And it looks like a lot of Democratic-leaning voters stayed home. Why do you suppose that is?
Well, on the one hand, it's not particularly surprising that turnout was lower. We weren't sure what was going to happen. We know that turnout increased amongst African Americans in particular, and we thought for a long time that a lot of that was part of the Obama effect, that people were drawn to come out to vote to elect and to reelect the first African American president. We weren't necessarily expecting record voter turnout, but there was a possibility that threat might have actually gotten people out. And, you know, we'd heard about the legendary Clinton campaign operation. So I think there were higher expectations that her GOTV operation had touched more people and that that would increase their likelihood of turning out to vote. I think the lesson 2 days later is that people, if people aren't buying what you're selling, it doesn't really matter. There were people who just didn't warm to Clinton's campaign. And as a result, they stayed home. And then people were also likely just turned off by the negative tenor of this race. So I think that leads to a reduction in turnout across the board because people were just so turned off by the tone of this campaign overall. If we look at the demographics, you could see the demographic shift continuing despite the fact that Donald Trump won. So nationally, this electorate was less white. More minority. That has to do with a growth amongst Latinos. So the Latino share of the population did grow, and that may be in part because of natural demographic changes with more Latinos coming into the system, coming of age, becoming naturalized and eligible to vote. African Americans made up a smaller share of the electorate in this election cycle as well. And then on top of that, then you look at the vote splits. So Donald Trump does about as well, occasionally slightly better, amongst minority groups compared to Mitt Romney in 2012. However, what really doomed Hillary Clinton was the option to vote for a third party or to not cast a ballot for president, to vote down ticket in other instances. And so there were, across the board, number of people who chose that third party option or none of the candidates. And if Clinton had gotten those votes, then she would have made up her margins. And so Clinton underperformed relative to Obama in terms of the proportion of the African American and Latino vote. And they didn't break out Asian American votes in the exit polls, but we assume that they make up a majority of the other vote. Than President Obama didn't, and that was surprising because we expected that given the racial vitriol of the race, that that would actually give her Obama types of numbers within these constituents. We didn't expect her to underperform President Obama in this respect.
CNN commentator Van Jones on election night expressed his shock and dismay on the election results. He called it a white lash.
Mm-hmm.
Do you call it a white lash?
Well, he's reflecting this notion of there being some type of racial backlash. And this is something that historians have actually thought was going on. We just didn't realize the extent to which it was happening until the emergence of the Trump phenomenon. So what he means when he talks about the notion of a racial backlash is a notion that historians, historically inclined political scientists, had observed long ago about the progress of civil rights in the United States, that moments of racial breakthrough are often met with some type of backlash. So, for instance, if you have the Reconstruction era post-Civil War where blacks are learning to exercise their freedoms, then it gets met with the historic nadir where you have the post-Reconstruction and the emergence of Jim Crow. The notion that civil rights happens and then you have the Southern strategy. So oftentimes you see these moments of progress just being met with resistance. President Obama's election represented a breakthrough, and people proclaimed America post-racial, but we also witnessed the backlash. 5 years ago, if you'd asked what the backlash was, I think we would have just summed it up in terms of the emergence of the Tea Party, and we identified the Tea Party in particular because there is public opinion data that suggests that members of the Tea Party are more likely to test higher on a battery of racial resentment questions in public opinion than those who do not identify with the Tea Party. So we're not saying that all of their concerns are racialized, but that members of the Tea Party are more likely to express views that could be conceived as racially resentful. It went beyond that. So the emergence of the Trump movement, where Trump was able to make overt appeals to racial resentment, which people didn't think you could do anymore, and that he succeeded in doing that is further evidence of the backlash.
Yeah. We have We have just a moment before a newscast. I wanted to quickly get in. It wasn't just the protests last night, but we had, you know, social media. People were expressing their fear. Parents were afraid to send their children to school because they were afraid of how they might be treated. Very briefly, 30 seconds, how widespread do you think this fear is?
Oh, I think the fear is very widespread. I think half of America woke up yesterday, and they were very, very disheartened by what they saw. President Trump is going to have to get past the rhetoric that got him elected, and he's going to have to figure out a way to credibly bring the country together and to reckon with the consequences of the rhetoric that was used to get him elected to office.
We are talking with Andra Gillespie, an associate professor of political science at Emory University in Atlanta. We'll welcome your calls for her after the news, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about the shock and fear and concerns many are feeling this week following the election of Donald Trump. Protesters took to the streets last night in several cities. Parents were expressing concerns about sending their kids to school, especially if their children were Latino or black or, for that matter, girls. Afraid of the treatment because of the election of Donald Trump. Many believe Donald Trump is someone who has expressed bigoted, sexist, racist, and xenophobic rhetoric during the campaign, and they are afraid of what his election means to them. What do you think? What fears do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Andra Gillespie, an associate professor of political science at Emory University in Atlanta. She specializes in African-American politics and political participation. Jason in Eau Claire is with us. Hello, Jason.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm good. What are your thoughts?
I think it's ridiculous. White lash? I mean, come on. They said that most voters were uneducated white people. That's kind of a racist thing to say. I'm actually a college-educated white person. My wife, my mother, they all voted for Trump. And he, you know, the reason why I voted the way that I did was because I want less government in my life. I think that I'm plenty capable of making my own decisions, what's good for me and my family. I love hunting. I love my guns.
You know, Jason, I appreciate this, and I do actually want to do a show devoted entirely to Trump supporters and why they supported Trump. But what we're kind of focusing in on this hour is that there are a lot of people in minority communities who are very concerned because of the things he said during the campaign. Do you think that that's not an issue?
I really don't think that.
Well, you don't, but do you think they shouldn't make it an issue?
I don't think so. My children are biracial, and they went to school, and they were just fine yesterday. Nobody said anything to them. They came home happy as they ever are. So I honestly don't understand the problem. And yes, my wife is a U.S. citizen, so I'm not concerned about her being deported or anything like that. And I think that's, you know, I'm not trying to be mean or anything, but if you're a U.S. citizen, that's one thing. If you came over here illegally and you're having kids, how do you afford them anyways? You got to be able to get a job around here. It's hard enough for me to even get a job or employ people.
Professor Gillespie, what's your reaction to Jason's comment? And I'm glad I pressed a little bit. He's apparently has biracial children. It sounds like His wife is a U.S. citizen, but is from a different country.
Well, first, you know, I respect his vote. What we're looking at are just the probabilities of having voted one way or another. So the fact that he's a college graduate distinguishes him. The vote for Trump nationally amongst college-educated whites was roughly even. Trump had a slight advantage, a 4 percentage point advantage amongst white college graduates. But if we look at that same difference among whites who didn't have a college degree, that difference is 39 percentage points. So had he not had a college degree, he would have been about 18 percentage points more likely to have voted for Trump than he would have been to have voted for Hillary Clinton. And so those are the differences that we're talking about in terms of demographics. He stated a lot of reasons why he would vote Republican. So he's pro-Second Amendment. He's pro-small government. That suggests that ideologically he was in the Republican camp. What we're trying to understand is why we see those differences across educational lines, across racial lines, and across income lines. And those help to inform the differences that we see, because people in those from those backgrounds tend to have different perspectives on things, and they might have very different lived experiences. So I think as we try to figure out how to live and to work together, we have to recognize the ways in which people's class status, people's gender, people's race actually gives people different, or helps people, puts people in different perspectives, because they have usually experienced life a little bit differently, and so that ends up informing their points of view. You know, I would tell people that I would judge people based on past experience. So if your kids have had no problem going to school, I would go in and assume that there isn't going to be a problem going forward. The problem is that there had been some rhetoric before the election in some places that would have suggested that younger people may have been threatened. So, you know, this is just purely anecdotal. I have a friend on the West Coast who is Latina, whose daughter went to school, and in the summer they were having conversations on the playground about who was going to get deported if Donald Trump were president. And while his family doesn't seem to be affected by this, the reality is that historically, there have been instances where we have seen mass deportations and where there were allegations that American-born citizens accidentally got rounded up in those. And especially looking at deportation, some groups are more likely to be targeted than others for having their citizenship questioned. Yeah. And it's those things that I think people are being very, very sensitive to. So what I would encourage him to do is to live his life, but also to recognize that there's a historical context for a lot of people's concerns, and to be sensitive to that historical context.
Thank you, Jason, for the call. Next, we go to Troy in Muskego. Hi, Troy.
Hello, yes. Three quick points. First one, I think the first caller just proved the point. The fact they started demonizing and scapegoating minorities right away just proves the point how this is affecting people.
I'm sorry, I don't understand how he did that, but how did he demonize minorities?
Right away, the first thing he did was he started to say, talk about how people come in this country and illegals, and then he pointed out the fact that he's having a hard time with a job, and then he referenced how, you know, how somebody could come over here illegally and have kids, and then not...
Yeah, all right,
So, sorry about that. But anyways, the main point I want to say is I'm a teacher in the inner city. And it's really interesting that, you know, kids were depressed, the adults were depressed. I was directing traffic. I had a sixth grade girl just come up to me when I was directing traffic and said, Mr. Weiss said, what, are we going to get deported to Africa? And I thought that was interesting. But, you know, this is coming from a child. Obviously, you know, she's overhearing parents or something at home. But this is a sixth grade, you know, 11-year-old student just saying this, you know, coming up to me. And, you know, that's scary, and I don't think anybody should have to even think like that. And the other interest, the third point I want to make is, you know, when you talk to the old people that, the older black adults that went through the civil rights, and you talk to them about this kind of thing, and they saw Wisconsin when it was all red like that, especially Wisconsin being as segregated as it is, their thoughts are, what, this is surprising? You know, this isn't surprising to them. And you look at Obamacare, how... that's been demonized and scapegoated and used as
Troy, I feel bad, but we don't have all the time for so many points, and I appreciate it. Very, very strong feelings on this, but we need to let our guests go pretty soon. I wanted to your reaction to Professor Gillespie to Troy saying that here he had a fifth grade student. Asking if Trump was going to deport African Americans.
I think Donald Trump, President-elect Trump, has a long way to go in reaching out to African Americans. So he did much better than I would have predicted amongst black voters. But he still has that problem where more than 90% of African American voters didn't vote for him. And it still reflects the suspicion that many African Americans have had for almost the last 50 years, about the Republican Party. I think the rhetoric that he used, the tone, sometimes the staging of the comments that he made, is something that's going to be really suspicious. He says that he's going to be better for African Americans than Democrats are. He suggested that the Republican Party has a better plan for producing jobs, for bringing economic development back to inner cities. He's going to have to demonstrate that. So I think people are going to have to hold him accountable to the promises that he made, and they want to see how what he's able to produce on that front. But they're also going to be looking at how he produces it and the tone in which he's produced it. You know, he's talked about things that are highly controversial in African-American and Latino communities with respect to criminal justice reform. You know, he's endorsed stop-and-frisk policies that at least, you know, at the federal level in New York have been flagged as unconstitutional. He talked about law and order, which just the phrasing itself is a throwback to the Southern Strategy and Richard Nixon in 1967. So there's going to have to be some recognition of the way that words can alienate, and he's going to have to get past those words and to start a humble conversation about reconciliation with those communities. Now, if he's able to produce the things that he says he's able to produce, then there's also going to have to be a recognition, and he'll have to get credit for it. But I think there's just going to have to be a recognition that people are going to be very suspicious from the get-go because of the way he ran his campaign.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Andra Gillespie, Associate Professor of Political Science at Emory University in Atlanta. She specializes in African-American politics and political participation. We continue our discussion now with another guest who comes from a philosophical standpoint. And we are going to continue to take your calls. We are looking at the fear that many members of minority groups are feeling following the election of Donald Trump. Yesterday, some high school students walked out of class crying. Some parents expressed fear of sending their black or Hispanic or Muslim children to school. At colleges, faculty held support groups and even postponed midterm exams because people were so upset. And then, of course, protests all over the country last night. In several cities, at least 10 major cities, including Chicago and St. Paul here in the Midwest, protesters upset and fearful of a Donald Trump presidency. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm wondering if you are in a community that feels any fear or concern or worry following the election of Donald Trump, a candidate that many believe expressed sexist and racist and xenophobic campaign rhetoric during the presidential campaign. Let me welcome our next guest. George Yancey is a professor of philosophy at Emory University, and his works are primarily in the areas of critical philosophy of race, critical whiteness studies, and philosophy of the black experience. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being with us. First, what is your reaction to all these protests across the nation?
Actually, we were having our class yesterday, and we decided to cancel. We didn't walk out or anything, but we decided to cancel because many of the students were just too numb. I think was the term that we used. We came up with, and so too numb and just disoriented, quite frankly. But when I got home, because I teach a grad course in the evening, I did see the protests. And quite frankly, I have to say, I was I was sort of not surprised. I didn't know what was going to happen, but I was not surprised. And yet there was a part of me that was also appreciative of the fact that you had the demos, the people out protesting. And really, I think unfortunately, I didn't get to hear your earlier speaker, your guest, but I think there was that sense of fear that my students were expressing, a sense of even deep existential ennui, like what's going to happen next. So I think that the protests for me were surprising and yet I think politically important.
Yeah. Well, and she said that certainly a protest is can be very important and certainly is a right, peaceful protest to express your concerns. She also, though, said that there needs to be a realization that Donald Trump did win and needing to not necessarily accept what his policies are going to be, but to work with him or political organizations to try to, I guess, get the fair policies that they want.
Sure. Sure. I guess, I mean, there's a part of me that believes, I mean, there's a part of me that's torn, right? There's a part of me that believes in the democratic process. But last night with my students, we were wondering about the democratic process itself, which is very strange at this moment in 2016. Only because the democratic process has precisely produced someone like a Donald Trump. So that for me, there was a part of me that was saying last night, I think this form of protestation ought to continue in the light of the kind of individual that we have, well, not we, a collective we, that some of us have in fact put into office. So that moment of reconciliation with a Donald Trump, I'm not sure of what that would look like, because if you've got an individual who is, in fact, racist, xenophobic, sexist, militaristic, right, who is speculating about, you know, playing with the possibility of nuclear proliferation, particularly in terms of the ways in which he, you know, characterized in this monolithic way, and appeared as a white savior figure, as I call it, with respect to the black community, there's a way in which we were sort of concluding last night that given that this is the individual that we have produced, which we all agree was a sad day in American history, why should we, in fact, look ultimately toward a certain kind of transformation of this figure based upon what we saw as a dispositional the very disposition of the individual, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that language of Obama and Clinton to give him a chance, but that kind of language for us last night functioned as a kind of the kind of discourse that's necessary within the context of a democracy, and yet at the same time within the context of a democracy, I think people have a right to protest what they see as not just an individual who is who's become president-elect, but someone who is not capable of a certain kind of transformation, and someone who has already insulted enough people such that they're not prepared, right, to believe that this individual can be any different than he is.
George Yancey is a professor of philosophy at Emory University. And we will talk more with him after we check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and we will take more of your calls. Our lines are full. People who have some concerns or fear following the election of Donald Trump. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Would especially like to hear from you if you are a member of a minority community that feels some sort of shock or fear following the divisive campaign that we just went through. listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about the fear that many in minority communities are feeling today. People who are afraid over the election of Donald Trump, many whom believe he was elected despite of, or maybe even because of, his campaign rhetoric, sexist, racist, xenophobic campaign rhetoric. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking with George Yancey, a professor of philosophy at Emory University. And let's go to the phones as our lines are full. Talia in Milwaukee is with us first. Hi, Talia.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Hi, I just wanted to add a couple of things. I work for a school K through 8 in the South Side that is pretty much bilingual. Yesterday morning, there were so many kids crying in the hallway. It was just heartbreaking. It got so bad that the school principal did have to go on the PA system and assure the kids and their parents about the U.S. democracy and not to be fearless, you know, not to be fearing of the government and to be supported. On a personal note, my children are half Mexican. My husband is an immigrant from Mexico. When Donald Trump said all those things about Mexicans, my own daughter asked me if what he was saying was true. Of course, I had to reassure her that it wasn't. We are living in fear because they do have relatives who are here illegally, but they are hardworking people. But nevertheless, they're still fearful. My own kids were afraid to go to school yesterday morning because they thought that they were going to be mocked, that they were going to be told to go back to Mexico. I mean, it's a lot of fear, and it's different when people just say they hear about it, but when you experience it, it's a totally different feeling.
Professor Yancey, you want to respond?
Yeah, and I'm very sorry to hear that. I think that as an African-American and talking with some African-Americans who woke up the day after the election, for them it was like the difference between night and day. It was as if the universe had shifted, as if the grounds from under their feet had been rocked and moved in a certain kind of way. Particularly, and I'm going to speak to your situation, particularly when we're finding, and I don't know if this has been confirmed or not, someone like Giuliani is being chosen as Attorney General. And we think about stop and frisk with respect to black people, or you think about the fact that he referred to the Black Lives Movement as a terrorist organization. We know that what we're going to see as black people is more of the same. And if Obama, you know, under his tenure, if he wasn't able to, in any way, as far as I'm concerned, undo white supremacy or undo white privilege and the demonization of the black body, if he wasn't able to do it as the first African-American president, I know that Trump will be unable to do it. And I can't speak to your fear because I think it's important for you to speak that fear. But as both of us being persons of color, I think that this signifies something in American history that we have never, well, I can't say that we've never seen, but in terms of at least a presidential candidate, now presidential-elect, I think that what we're seeing is a byproduct of not just presidential, you know, pre-presidential rhetoric on the part of Trump, but we're hearing something about what this man actually believes and what he actually stands for. So I think it's a moment in American history that we ought to, and that the world ought to, feel a great deal of. We ought to be sad and just politically angered by what America has in fact produced. So when this sort of thing happens, I don't even know what to say to Latino children or Chicano children or Muslims in America at the moment, because the problem is that we don't want to. On the one hand, we want to say that America is better than it is, while at the same time, given Trump's discourse, given his character, it is unpredictable. And given that unpredictability, I think that people are justifiably on edge, right? I mean, I also, students were emailing me about the expression that I kept hearing was feeling numb. which meant that they didn't even know how to express that anger, what you know, bell hooks refers to as killing rage, right? They didn't know what to do with that rage. And I think that for me, those protests, for example, that we're seeing around the country are indicative of that numbness, but it's a way in which people are creatively expressing that discontent and that deep fear that's going on.
Yeah. There are, though, not only is there fear from some that I'm seeing expressed specifically to President-elect Trump and what policies he might enact that would affect how they are treated, but they were bewildered or hurt or fearful that so many people voted him into office. What about that? That you know, live among neighbors who voted in someone who you fear. I'm sorry, Professor Yancey.
Oh, that for
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. Well, that's deeply problematic, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there was. It's funny that I was thinking when I was watching some of the discussions when the pundits were talking about. The surrogates, we're talking about the ways in which, and I don't want to get too far off here, racism operates in America, the way in which they would point to cases of racism that we can sort of say, well, that is a case of racism. But and you'd have, you know, someone like Don Lemon and a Trump surrogate talking about some racial incident. And it occurred to me that the problem of racism in America is not one that's spectacular. It's one that exists precisely when you have a Don Lemon vis-a-vis a white Trump surrogate. I mean, it's that is the space where racism exists and that we don't talk about in America. So I think you're right. I mean, for the next 4 years, or even, you know, prior to that, during the general election, there are individuals that I would pass by on the street who I didn't know whether they're voting for Trump or not. But it seems to me that it's that kind of problem that exists. It's the fact that we are living in a society in which you know, our neighbors are siding with an individual who is, as I'll repeat, a sexist, a racist, a xenophobe, someone who, again, flirts with the idea of nuclear proliferation, someone who is, in terms of his disposition, divisive, right? And so that, for me, by extension, then calls into question the individuals who heard, you know, this individual, who gave this individual with no political experience at all, the opportunity, well, not the opportunity, but who gave this individual with no political experience at all, who now became president, right, a billionaire. There's something to be said about what was it in his discourse, what is it about his disposition that resonated, in this case, with so many white people. And I know that wasn't the only demographic, but what was he able to tap into?
Let me jump in, because yeah. Here's Jess on Facebook who said, people who voted for Trump didn't vote for the person as much as the idea of breaking a bankrupt political system. Tired of crooked career politicians who care more about padding their pockets than representing the citizens they are supposed to serve. I saw some article that said, this is the forgotten voter who feels that they have been ignored, and they're not taking Trump literally with some of his rhetoric, but they just think that he can they're overlooking that rhetoric and thinking he can shake up this broken system.
Yeah, I think that what we need to listen to are not the voices that attempt to make a fine distinction between Donald Trump's rhetoric, the part that's completely abhorrent, and the idea that somehow he's going to undo the powers that be. The problem there is that Donald Trump is all of that, right? And And while one wants to shake up the powers that be, and I was thinking what was interesting about Trump is when he critiqued both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, that that's been an old leftist critique for years, that both have somehow failed us, have failed poor white people and have failed black people. And while there's a point to be made there, one, I don't think he's sophisticated enough to really talk about that kind of thing that's necessary, but two, it's not possible for me, I can't extract out of Trump and see the political message against big business, politics as usual, and then to separate out that all of his sexism, his racism, his xenophobia. So for me, it's already a card that I'm not prepared to play, right, in the light of the moral fiber or the lack of moral fiber that Donald Trump manifests, right?
Let me take one last call, Professor Yancey. Gary in Merrill. Hi, Gary.
Yes, hello. Well, I'm so happy with Donald Trump. I think the time for the majority people is over. We are tired of hearing minority. We're tired of hearing racism. And I think Donald Trump is going to speak for all Americans instead of just a few. And I think it's a very good thing. We have been beat over the head with racism for decades now, and it's time for it to come to an end.
Well, we have just a minute. Do you think it's going to come to an end?
No, I don't think it's going to come to an end. If anything, Donald Trump is going to usher in a new form, not a new form, but the same old form of racism and perhaps new forms of racism. I'm not sure who's tired of being beat over the head with racism. I know that black people and people of color, I know that Muslims in this country are tired of xenophobia, tired of Islamophobia. We're tired of everyday forms of racism, stop and frisk, marginalization. I think that what I just heard was precisely indicative of a kind of acceptance of an individual who scares me and reminds me of Bull Connor in the 1960s. And so, I mean, to me, it's deeply problematic what I just heard. And if other Americans who voted for Trump believes that, if Obama, as the first African American president, has not healed this nation, then Trump is certainly not going to be a bomb for this country. He's going to be malignant, and is going to be a disease and a cancer for this country.
Well, we will, I'm sure, talk again. George Yancey, a professor of philosophy at Emory University. This is the Ideas Network.